For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
To another episode of Bad Signal Podcast. We're in doomsday, New England. I'm almost happy and sad that like the delusional New England Patriots fans can finally come to their wits. I feel like everyone's been bewitched this entire season. Jerry Thornton is here to just unravel it all. Who better than you, Jerry? Welcome to the show. How you doing?
Courtney, thanks for having me. And by the way, excellent timing to have on a shameless Patriots honk like me. You know, like of all the years where I've been like accused of being overly optimistic, I'm on the day after they get eliminated for the playoffs for the first time in like, what, 12 years or something. So yeah, to all the Patriots haters who might be watching this, go ahead, make margaritas out of my tears. That's fine. I'll just sit here and paint my butt red, get out of my cage and just dance for us, monkey. Dance. Go ahead, Patriots fan. How's it feel now? I'll take all the abuse you have.
Did you light your trash on fire when you saw 2,000 to 3,000 Buffalo Bills fans jumping on firelit tables as they welcomed the AFC East champions? It's like you might as well just take that fifth of Jack Daniels and just hit it straight to the head when you see something like that. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, I accept that. I kind of get it. I mean, there is a level at which if you have some kid who lives in an impoverished like village somewhere and you give him a hoop and a stick that he can push down the road, he's thrilled. And then you have some other kid and you give him the new PlayStation 5 and they're just like, okay, I'm kind of bored with this already. And so that's us. And I'm not happy to be spoiled, but at least we don't show up in the dead of night to celebrate clinching the playoffs. I mean, mark my words, so many grandmothers right now in Western New York are buying those, you know, AFC East hats and shirts. That like only people around here were buying like, you know, 19 years ago before we said, no, we don't celebrate this stuff here. This is,
I'll
hold on. I'll get the Super Bowl merch, Grandma, but thank you. Your heart's in the right place. Yeah, that stuff's flying off the shelves in Buffalo because they haven't won a playoff game since when? Before?
In the mid-90s, like, 1995. Yeah. I was
like pre-Doug Flutie. Right.
Yeah.
There was a curse on them after they benched Doug Flutie in favor of Rob Johnson. How's that for an old reference? And if they're a Bills fan and you remember that, like you've been voting for 10 years. So, exactly. Yeah. No. Hey, good for them. I love the Bills Mafia. I don't know if you're quite aware of how much of a following they have on Barstool, but they are the gift that keeps on giving. And so, you know, maybe success will spoil them, but they might not want to get used to it because there's a history of teams being the next big thing and then crashing and burning to the ground. Hello, Jacksonville from 3 years ago.
I was just talking about that to some of the people I do work for the game day. It's more or less like a Bleacher Report concept. If you see some of my videos, I just did a video about why Aaron Rodgers should be MVP of the league over Patrick Mahomes. But some people were even mentioning one of the guys on the show, which I completely disagreed. He's like, oh, Josh Allen looking like a front runner for MVP. I was like, dude, are you out of your fucking mind?
But yes, okay.
He was like, okay, yeah, sure. Why don't you go skip to the gambling lines? Because let's be realistic here. Josh Allen has turned the corner. He has perennial all-pro wide receivers. That would be wonderful to have had a guy like that on our team for the last couple of years. They killed it with the Stephon Diggs trade. They've got Sammy Watkins. Everyone wrote him off and thought he was dead. You know, that team is stacked and good for them because with a guy like Brian Daboll, who won 5 Super Bowl rings, mind you, 5 Super Bowl rings over his 11 years in New England. You're welcome. You know, you're welcome. I'm not knocking them at all. I think the Bills, they've got a bright future, but I got to tell you, it was hella weird to tweet that yesterday. I said hat and t-shirt day for the Buffalo Bills. Yikes. That's a long time before. 2008 was the last time we said it wasn't hat and t-shirt day in New England. We're on to the next thing.
Sure. And they can accurately say what Teddy Bruschi was saying back in like 2003. Hey, we don't lose hat and t-shirt games. Yeah, because you haven't been in one since, I don't know, since the K-gun offense or whatever, since Marv Levy. But yeah, I get the Josh Allen thing because he's the new bright, shiny object that they're not used to. But I mean, what Aaron Rodgers is doing this year is just insane. It's off the charts. I don't know how many times he's had a passer rating of 100 or better, but I want to say it's like twice as many as like Mahomes has.
So the numbers that we broke down, he leads the league in touchdowns, interceptions. He has 40 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. Mahomes has 8, and that is his third 4 touchdown season. Third 40 touchdown season, which leads the NFL ever. And he thinks that he should have gotten the MVP in 2012, 2016. What he's doing right now, he leads the league in passer rating, completion percentage. Pat Mahomes, he leads in yardage, but that's about it. And the guy's 37 years old and he's doing it with less. It's one of those things that I know that our pal Fitzy has kind of in some of our Should Pats Fans Say videos, you know, I can remember him popping up from one of the lines of merchandise inside Patriot Place doing the video. Remind me how Rodgers and Brady are in the same conversation. I kind of see it now. He's doing more with less. Pat Mahomes, he's got all those first, second round pick guys. I mean, Travis Kelce, outside of Stephon Diggs, it just got beat yesterday. Travis Kelce leads the league in receiving yards because he's the second coming of Rob Gronkowski, and that's his number one go-to guy to move the sticks. He's got Tyreek Hill. He's got Mecole Hardman. He's, you know, got the – we'll see what Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be able to do down the stretch, but he's got all those weapons. Who the hell can you name on that Green Bay Packers team outside of Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones? I'm going to toss it up to you. Who else can you name?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the scheduling being what it is, and I've had to focus so much of my attention on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Talk about a sentence that you're not used to saying.
Yeah.
I've the times I've gotten to actually sit down and watch 60 minutes of Aaron Rodgers football have been few and far between. But anytime, you know, that you've gone from a Pats game to one of the teams that we just mentioned, one of the offenses that we just mentioned, you need to have like a buffer offense in between so you don't like get the bends. You know, like when you come up from deep sea diving, when you go from a quarterback that had 5 touchdown passes on the season to one that's a threat to have 5 every single time they touch the ball. It will put like air pockets in your joints and may cripple you. So I'm not a huge Aaron Rodgers fan. There's just kind of I think I can say this on your podcast. Okay. There's a dickishness to him a little bit.
Think women so much too. It's a kind of an odd, I don't want to bring that up, but there's some Olivia Munn kind of outed him on some stuff.
Yeah. Without naming names, and I'm a huge Olivia Munn fan. She is a nerd goddess and every guy I know, like who I respect, loves her. She, without naming names, kind of alluded to someone that she was with that was really atrocious in the boudoir. Exactly. So I like to think it was him. And I really wanted him and Matt LaFleur to be like two cats in a burlap bag, like just clawing at each other, ripping each other to shreds. And it looked really bad early on there. And there was an adjustment period. But what can you say? They're killing it. So
they are killing it.
Not a great time to be someone who takes pleasure in watching Aaron Rodgers fail, but there's always the postseason with that guy.
Yeah, that's what everyone keeps. Well, speaking of the postseason, even though that was nice, that was a nice comeback. I see that 28-3 poster in the background, and I had some money on the Bucks yesterday, even though they didn't cover the spread, which whatever, they just still came back and didn't completely obliterately embarrass me. Something in the water needs to be saged in that facility for the Atlanta Falcons, because that was fucking embarrassing for them. Brady coming, seeing a 17-0 lead, and then just breaking open 31 points in the second half. It, you know, that's nice and all, but do you think Tom Brady is equipped to really take the Bucs to a deep postseason run? For some reason, some part of me says that the pressure's just going to mount to him when he's in that first or second round, and those demons are going to creep back, and something is just not going to click. Like, Father Time's just going to come right out of his ass and just snip him in the worst time. I just, something inside of me doesn't believe that that's him, because the NFC itself is so weak. He has the potential to take that team to the NFC championship game outside of the Packers and what they can do in the postseason. That conference is wide open, but part of me just doesn't, I don't see it happening.
You know, my default setting is to believe in the heredity of a franchise, that there's DNA that gets passed down through. For instance, the Atlanta Falcons. There's never a lead that's so big that they can't blow it, and they prove it 4 or 5 times a season, where you just get this jaw-dropping lead just evaporate from them. The Detroit Lions will always be a loser franchise. And I... Now, sometimes it changes. Kansas City, a prime example. Suddenly, Andy Reid learned how to, you know, not kick a game away with bad clock management in the postseason or whatever. I still think, until Brady proves otherwise, that's in the Bucs' DNA. I mean, that is the franchise with the worst winning percentage in the history of the NFL. It was like 385 coming into the season. What he's done has been amazing, but I still think there's, the whole is less than the sum of its parts there. I mean, because look at, he has Nick Fury'd together, and I just use Nick Fury's name as a verb, this Avengers of skill position guys. I mean, how many times have you just seen them pull out like a fourth or a fifth tight end you never heard of? And all of a sudden the guy's like picking up 20 yards because they're covering everybody else.
Toys in the toy box. That's my problem. Yeah, I viewed this at the beginning and maybe the middle of the season when he went all in on Antonio Brown, and even watching him, I feel like he's just fucking with all of us. In that post-game interview, he's standing there with his eyes wide and bright. It's like he's been drugged before the game. Like, be nice, Antonio. Nice, Antonio. He, you know, great. He's not allowed to go through the locker room and smash things and throw his camera on and, you know, videotape Andy Reid in his post-game celebration, because we all remember that time when he put Mike Tomlin on Facebook. Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely. One of my favorite moments. They had just squeaked out a postseason game. I forget who they played, but it was not a great team. And they didn't even score a touchdown, and they squeaked one out. The Patriots played Houston that same weekend. It was the Saturday night game where they were like 14.5-point favorites or something. It was one of the biggest spreads ever. They covered the spread, but their locker room was like awake, because they all said, we did not play well. We can't win if we play like this. And so the next day, there's Mike Tomlin saying, all right, guys, this is what we got to do. We got to stay calm. All right. Watch yourselves on social media. With those, them assholes have an extra day to prepare, meaning the Patriots. And we know this because while he's wanting his team to watch the social media, he did Antonio Brown was doing like a 20-minute Facebook Live.
Yes, I remember. And do you
remember it? Do you remember what he was saying?
I just know, I remember. Yeah, he was, I mean.
It was 20 minutes of this.
I'm surprised.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's right. Yeah, it was like TikTok before TikTok was TikTok. It was like, what is this guy? There's not even words there. And so that was my first kind of, you know, taste of what this guy is about, how he's wired. And yeah, I'm with you, Courtney. It is a matter of time before he turns into the clubhouse carcinogen that he's always been. And by the way, Bruce Arians can talk a nice game, but we know he hates this guy. We know he didn't want him. And Brady has always said, oh, I don't care about personnel. I leave that up to other people. I just do my job. No, no, you're putting a team together. He's putting together a super group, you know, like the traveling Wilburys. And he brought in a guy who's no Roy Orbison or George Harrison. He brought in a bad actor who's going to at some point come back to the huddle saying, I was open, why didn't I get the ball? And then it's going to fall apart. I hope.
To me, and I say this a number of different times, you saw that hit that he took from Vontaze Burfict that completely snapped his entire neck backwards. And I say that, I think I said that Vontaze Burfict has ruined a couple of careers. And they're like, give me examples. I don't know if you stay off of Twitter these days, but it's an absolute minefield of assholes and of people who are young and uneducated on the game of the NFL that just absolutely want to poo-poo on everything that you say. And like, I'm sitting back there and I'm like, are you not aware of what he did to Antonio Brown's life? Because after that hit, that man was speaking with his head twisted backwards. And call God and this. And all of the antics started after that. Do you know how hard it is for someone who is fighting demons to keep a straight face on certain things? I'm sure he's wanting to explode and let go of, burn off some energy of whatever he's feeling. Like you said, it's really only a matter of time before he starts to show that side of him again. And hopefully for them, at least, it won't be until the end of the season. But
you know, I should be fair. And if
time bomb,
And that hit was so brutal. And if that's the cause of his, let's just call it misbehavior or his just immature man-child act that he always lapses into, then I would feel bad. I prefer to think that he just grew up athletic and had his ass kissed his whole life and didn't have to never had to learn to be like just a moderately decent person. I mean, he threw rocks at a moving van driver this summer. Why? Because the guy wanted to get paid before he delivered the stuff. And so Antonio Brown threw rocks at him. And so Bruce Arians did this whole thing. Well, you know, we're confident that he's changed as a person. He's a model citizen. Yeah, because, you know, a lot of 31-year-olds suddenly become a different person. You know, I'm a big believer that the person you are when you're 6 years old is pretty much the same person you are when you're 36, when you're 46. You can tweak it and you can, you know, some people have an epiphany or whatever. But for the most part, if you're an obnoxious kid, you're going to be an obnoxious adult. And I think that's him. And the perfect thing, too, I've never understood why people go to bat for this guy. Of all the people you want to, like, take bullets for, I will never forget him diving right at Rob Gronkowski's knee. I mean, it was blatant. And Dan Fouts was doing the game. He just goes, well, he wasn't doing that intentionally. Oh, okay. So this time it was an accident. Boy, this guy has the worst luck. You know, he just, everywhere he goes, he's diving his helmet at somebody's like money-making joints and organs. So yeah, Vontaze Burfict is one of those guys you just say, one of these days I'm going to hear about like some tragedy befalling him and we're going to go, kind of saw that one coming.
Yeah, it's weird because I covered a few Bengals games with him in the locker room. And when I was at NFL Network and I approached him just to speak on a few things before the game, just to get my game quotes. And when I tell you, it's actually alarming what a kind and odd person he is. I asked him, I said, you know, what do you do on the field? Like what makes that switch flip on? And he is a strange, strange man because he is not the person that you see on the field. I mean, there's gotta be something that's, that's twisted on the other side that you don't even see. I mean, I'm trying to think of ways to explain it, and I probably can't, and I should probably move on to other things. But
no kidding. So nice guy, polite.
Nice, polite, well-spoken, upbeat. He's got some odd sparkle in his eye. I can't really explain it. It just really freaked me out. Just knowing the type of player and watching him as a player on the field for so many years.
No kidding. Is the sparkle at all like the one I have? Because I mean, because I get on a comedy stage or sit down on my laptop to work, and I too become just a demon from hell. So I get that. You know, there's two sides to each of us. So he's got this like Gollum Smeagol thing going.
Okay, yeah.
Exactly. See, okay, now that's also disappointing, because I just prefer to think that he's
just a bad guy.
Yeah, just a vicious monster no matter where he goes. But maybe, you know, how many hockey players do you hear that are the same kind of thing? Like they get out on the ice and they turn into feral savages, but then, you know, they get interviewed afterwards and they're just like the kindest, most, you know, genteel Canadian guy in the world. So
yeah,
go figure.
It's really odd too, because last thing before we move on to the pile of mess that is the 2020 New England Patriots, but if there's any sport that suffers more with CTE cases, it's hockey. Because the way that they get slammed against the board and their neck is completely exposed, and the way and with the force and the power, I've spoken to multiple hockey players, and I mean multiple, that have endured such severe CTE. It's a matter of just severe seizures on the daily, retiring early, and I mean the liability of them just dropping dead at any day after, you know, shortly after their careers, because of all of those hits to the head. I feel like it's something that's just so overlooked, and it's so sad. It really is.
Yeah. It's funny how that condition, the more we've learned about it, has really only stuck to one sport. You know what I mean? Like
I'm really confused. Exactly. I'm very confused that it's not brought up more in it's because it's so much worse in hockey.
Yeah. Well, and I've heard that statistically, if you go like per capita or whatever, that among like youth sports, let's see, it's like girls field hockey or something is the most vicious. I have a brother-in-law who had like 8 concussions in college in soccer playing goalie.
Wow.
But it was just, you know, that was in the days where, you know, all right, just shake it off. Or, hey, wow, he's looking a little punchy. Hey, you know, get this guy out of there or whatever. And you didn't think cumulative effects. He's fine. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, if you got 8 concussions playing, you know, center on your high school team, like they'd never let you play again. Maybe that's progress. I don't know. I come from it a little differently because I coached youth football for years during that time when parents were becoming petrified of it. And I was like, it's the best thing I ever did for my 2 sons to get them involved in that. Teach them, you know, it's up to coaches, make it safe. Teach kids don't lead with the crown of your helmet. It's bad for you. It's bad for the team. You don't make tackles that way, whatever. We can't be psycho about it, but I'm all about going to extremes, but people want to kill the sport of football. And you know, I love history, Courtney, and I'll get off my soapbox on this, but in 1905 they had a meeting in the Oval Office conducted by Teddy Roosevelt, my favorite all-time president, with college presidents, because they were trying to ban the sport of football then.
Wow.
18 guys died playing college football across the country. Think about how many of them were actually playing college football in 1905. It had to have been at like a tiny number. So people were dying doing it. So they changed the rules. They invented the neutral zone. They legalized the forward pass. Like they solved the problem. You know, we live in a world where there was a 100-year difference between the invention of the goalie mask and, going backwards, the invention of the slap shot. So sometimes we're slow to just kind of get smart about how to protect athletes, and we don't figure it out. Hell, I remember there was a guy on the Red Sox in my lifetime who batted without a batting helmet.
Wow.
He was the backup catcher. Wow. Carlton Fisk, wow. Backup catcher.
Oh, Carlton Fisk, number 27.
Yeah, Carlton Fisk's backup was a guy named Bob Montgomery, and he was like the announcer for years. And he would come to the plate, and I'm like, what is it? It was like an alien had just dropped down from, like, you know, passed through time from, like, 1938 or something. It's like, what is he doing? And he was grandfathered in. So, yeah, we can be smart about protecting people's heads without banning sports altogether. It's just, you know, we got to stop that mentality of, oh, we just put a dress on them. Yeah, I'm sure the first goalie that wore a mask, people were going, hey, why don't we just put a dress on him, eh? Like, look at that. What a puss. You know? And now you wouldn't dream of stepping onto the ice without full cover. Yeah,
protecting everything. Well, no proper way to transition into what's happening with the 2020 New England Patriots, but I guess we'll start at the quarterback position, and we're not talking about bad guys here because Cam Newton in no way is a bad guy. I really like and have learned to love Cam Newton as a locker room guy, the way that he conducts himself on media interviews, the way that he has come out and basically said that this is unacceptable. Let's see. I'm just reading this just now. So Cam Newton on it's just very hard. You want to talk about like alien talk, just trying to read his
hieroglyphics. Text. Yeah. I tried reading that thing earlier, just before we started the podcast. He posted this on the gram.
I wonder, I actually would love to ask him, does he have his own keyboard of just this exact speak, or does he have to like enter and hold and then, you know, on like a text board, does he have to like do all the stuff, or has he made his own keyboard?
Great question.
I'm fascinated to know.
Yeah. And would you go, where do you buy this laptop? Can I go to Best Buy and just say, I want something that looks vaguely like English. People can decipher it, but it's just the Jerry font. Like I don't. And it's
QWER, but like just a little different.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I'll read the message if that's at all possible. Just pick out the words you can, and we'll just decode it.
Dear Patriot Nation, all caps. I will be the first to tell you that this year has been unacceptable. In more ways than one, double exclamation point. And the standard has been and always has been set. And unfortunately, I did not live up to that standard, was at all times or was consistently enough. With that being said, the answers are in the locker room. And one thing I do know about this bunch is that this locker room is filled with guys who want to be a part of the solution, including me. All things considered, you will not see any finger pointing or excuse making, but more accountability being placed on the guys, me, to get the job done. I think I speak for myself and others when I say challenge accepted. The joy is in the process. Know the standard. Be the standard. Live up to the standard daily. Shine through the shade. One love, Cam Newton. Here's my problem. Is this his pitch to come back next year? Because I don't want any part of this quarterback in my locker room next year on a rebuild. I don't. As much as I love Cam Newton, he has done less for this team in historic ways than any quarterback since the 90s. He has 13 games. He's thrown 5 touchdowns. The last time someone did that was Trent Dilfer in 1995. The rules in this game, Jerry, makes it so easy to pass. It makes it so easy to step back in the pocket. They have, speaking of changing the rules of the game, I mean, this is a quarterback league. They want more passes, more scoring, hit the overs. It's Cam Newton is possibly having one of the worst seasons as a modern day quarterback in NFL history. And Bill Belichick has refused to pull him. And I really want to know why. I surmise to say that Cam, because of how, and this has nothing to do with anything. You know, going into the season, I thought that there would be a clash between Cam and his personality and the way that he would adjust to the culture of the New England Patriots. But it seems the only person that's having an issue with the culture is Jared Stidham. It seems the issue that he's having is not, I mean, Jared Stidham must be so fucking bad that he is sitting on the bench while Cam Newton is playing. Or Bill Belichick has some tacit understanding between Cam and his camp that because he gave him such a low ball dog deal, that Bill doesn't want to rock the boat. He doesn't want to rock the boat. He doesn't want to pull the guy because it really could ruin his career. That, I mean, that Cam's basically eating the humble pie and he's drinking all the Gatorade, and Bill's okay with that. But it is such a glaring question to sit back and say, Bill, what the hell are you doing? Are you trying to cover up your own mistakes, or are you trying to set up Cam as the fall guy? And I think it's kind of the latter.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. And you know, first, yeah, we'll separate the man who's been exemplary from the quarterback who's been a borderline Chernobyl-sized disaster. Yeah, the man, I think he came in here and, you know, dying to get his career back and super hyper-motivated and didn't care about money, and he's living away from his family, and he's, you know, just embraced his team to the extent that they could. I heard him on the radio this morning talking about, you know, how COVID interrupted them all kind of being able to come together as, like, you know, with friendships and, you know, that way you can relate to someone because you see them every day and you understand their moods and their moves or whatever. And it was really interesting. Like, he never says a false thing. You know what I mean? Like, he never stumbles in a way that you could twist his words, which people made a career out of doing with his predecessor. Tom Brady couldn't say, wow, good morning, it's a beautiful day out there, I can't wait to get going, without someone going, oh, so you know what he's saying, right? It was like the Boston media was like your Twitter followers. Like, yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, well, that's an obnoxious thing to be saying or whatever. Yeah. Hell, they tried to turn it into a controversy that he said, oh, I wouldn't be caught dead living through another New England winter. Yeah, welcome to the club, Tom. I'll object when he says something that I disagree with. But I say that 300 days out of the year. But anyway, now, Newton, the quarterback, I think part of this went to them saying, well, we can work with this guy. We're transitioning towards more of a run-first team anyway. And we can do the things that, say, Baltimore did to us last year, which is the Patriots were helpless to stop that Russian attack. Mm-hmm. They just had too many elements. That whole business of your quarterback as a primary runner gives him 10 blockers. And I think the Pats started that when they drafted Sony Michel. And that playoff run, they didn't face a linebacker in the three games that they played bigger than 240 pounds. So I think that they said, let's get big, let's get physical, we'll pound people, and then our passing game will come from there, as opposed to when Brady was here. The passing game just hasn't materialized, and I don't know how much of that is because of the talent level around him, but I think there are guys getting open, and Newton just is not in sync with what's happening around him. He holds the ball. You know, there's, you know, N'Keal Harry getting off the line, you know, using the footwork he's been working on, using his size, and everything becomes a second reaction play because Newton's holding the ball and he's looking and he's scanning, he's going through the progressions. I thought this after the Miami game, Courtney. I watched the primetime game, Cleveland. Baker Mayfield goes back, three-step drop, plants his foot, the ball comes out.
Yeah.
He's throwing guys open the way you're supposed to, instead of Newton is waiting for guys to become open, and you just can't get in a rhythm, and you're asking your line to block too much. So I think it was a noble experiment, and God knows he's been making slightly more money than Joe Cardona. I looked it up. He's 24th in the team in payroll, just ahead of the long snapper. So I think Belichick has stuck by him, one, because didn't want to transition the whole offense to another quarterback with a different skill set. And also because the team has rallied around him, they've tried to fight hard. It's just, it's failed. And I, wouldn't be surprised if in the next 2 weeks that he makes a change. He's kind of signaled that he's thinking about it anyway, which he hasn't said prior. Anytime he's been asked, he's like, Cam's our quarterback. Well, he threw for 69 yards. He threw for 350 last week.
You know? I mean, come on. He has thrown for 350 yards over the – Tom Brady threw for 350 in that game yesterday. Yeah. You know, coming back against the Falcons, Cam hasn't thrown that in the last four games combined.
Yeah, and like you said too, any quarterback in the league is capable of that just by the rules. And, you know, how many times have we seen some slappy come in the face of Patriots and – throw for 300 yards against him, someone like Matt Moore or somebody like that. I mean, anyone is capable of having that game. His best game was against Seattle. I mean, yeah. I could give you 250 yards against that is not the Seattle that we remember. So yeah, I think it's, I just can't see it continuing to next year in spite of how he phrased that well-written Instagram.
I don't see it happening. And I almost think that, again, Bill is not trying to ruin this guy's career, but
no.
When you see the guys that are open on the field, how many fucking times am I going to sit back in the pocket and watch Cam Newton throw at some receiver's feet? I mean, it's gotta be something in his body as well. It's not just mechanics and timing, because when you're going to sit back and you're going to assess the offense and the offensive play calls, how much of this is on Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick? I really want to know, because this guy, they're giving him all the tools in the tool shed. And this, either his body is incapable of reaching that next level, or again, they're keeping him in for a culture purpose and they're just... I don't know. I don't even believe the things that would come out of my mouth right now, because Belichick is not the one to sit back and tank. And I saw some bullshit thing with Pat McAfee saying Belichick is mailing in this year. No, he's not. Bill Belichick is not going to sit back and say, oh yeah, you know, that record that Tom Landry has for 20 straight season of winning football games. Yeah. I'm just going to mail this one in while Tom Brady racks up the wins down and he proves me wrong for not keeping him around. Yeah. 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 That's going to go just fine for me. Yeah. I'm going to mail it in because COVID's really through 18 weeks of a football season, including preseason, man. Yeah. This is just kind of getting too difficult to me to manage. And so I'm just going to mail it in. This is like, stop with the national narratives, people.
Oh,
and I'm not sitting
Courtney,
back here. I'm
save
not
save those back receipts, here. Courtney. Save those receipts.
Bullshit.
Because how many times
have we, right,
we have heard so many variations of this? You know, the game has passed them by. Oh, they haven't won a championship in 10 years. Clearly, he's got to start to innovate. He can't draft. He can't, you know, he doesn't sign free agents. He's too cheap. Like, you know, how many times have you seen the next new team that comes down the pike that all of a sudden breaks through, maybe beats him in a postseason game, and that's the template that he should be following? And then, I mean, he won three Super Bowls and has been to four since Rex Ryan and the Jets were the thing that he should be doing. You know, he should be aggressive. He should go out and get the next Darrell Reeves. Or how about, how many times have you heard at the end of the season he's going to go coach the Giants because they still tug at his heartstrings because that's where he was back in the 80s or whatever. Like, he was with Detroit before that. How comes no one's saying he wants to go coach in Detroit again? Was he going to go? You know, he used to fetch coffee for Ted March or Brode. I'm supposed to think he wants to go be with the Colts again? Like, it's nonsense.
He's going to go coach the Navy midshipmen.
That's his
goal. You know, right after the years of Cam Newton and this offense and the run forced offense, he's going to go run the triple option.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Commander in Chief Trophy.
Yeah. Now, there's been, you know, issues this year with him. They've uncharacteristically made the mistakes that they used to sit around and wait for the other teams to make. You know, whether it's not being able to get into the one at Seattle, Newton fumbling the ball against Buffalo, you know, bad penalties. The one the other day where they had the 12 men after a timeout, they put 12 men on defense, and that those things are uncharacteristic, but it's not like they never happened. It's just, it happens less here than it does elsewhere. So we're shocked when it happens, and we find some bigger reason. How else could this possibly be happening? Well, it must be because Belichick is working 4-hour days now and
yeah,
spending the rest of the time at home playing with his PlayStation. Like what? No, he's as committed as he's ever been. It's just this year has been they've had a steeper climb than almost any team in the league with all the opt outs and with the quarterback struggling. So,
The problem to me too, is that watching this team down the stretch, and not only is this offense just absolutely abominable, and I don't even watch the games anymore. I'll come in and keep it on Red Zone and watch Cam Newton overthrow someone on 3rd and 9. In the middle of a momentum swinging game in Miami or in wherever, and they're going to get steamrolled for the rest of this year. But part of the issue with that, Jerry, is the run defense. And we know that Dante Hightower, he just solves everyone's problems. He's like the fairy godmother dust on that defense. It's just things stop before they get to him, and he's the communication. And sure, but we've been dealing with this for 17 weeks of an NFL season. The Miami Dolphins ran 250 rushing yards against them, 175 in the second half alone. And it's not just Matt Breida. It was that kid Salvon Ahmed, and apparently he was inspired by his grandma, and he told her that he would have 100 yards rushing. He had 117. So not only is a rookie wide receiver picking them apart, but they are shoving this down their throats forcibly. And it's not just Cam Akers and that Rams offense either. The Chargers were running on them as well.
Yeah. And think of the three names you just mentioned. Cam Akers, right?
Salvon Ahmed. Exactly.
And Breida. Like, you know, I was looking for a comparison between these two Dolphins guys, and I just screw it. I'm going to go old school. Yeah, they're the Doc Blanchard and Glenn Davis, Mr. Inside and Mr. Outside of the 21st century. Like, who are these guys to be running for, 120 combined yards? Never mind double that. Never mind 250. For the life of me, I never thought I would live to see the day that a Patriots defense would give up that many yards in consecutive weeks. Like, just non-competitive. You know what? And we all laugh at the cliche. Oh, you got to stop the run. Well, there's proof that just because it's a cliche doesn't mean it's wrong. Because what else does it matter?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the Patriots have allowed the 6th most rushing yards in the NFL this year. So on top of needing a first round, and I mean, listen, I'm not limiting that to a first or a second round. Man, they better save their pennies in the offseason. I don't even think $60 million in cap space is enough. I don't trust Bill Belichick to go out and get a wide receiver. I don't trust him to go out and get a salvageable quarterback, because we all know how laissez-faire he was in adjusting to the fact that, hey, I think we're going to be just okay with someone because, you know, Tommy, he was a system quarterback. He was a system guy. This entire year is such a failure. And I've almost, we could go through all of the disappointments. And by the way, I don't think Julian Edelman should be coming back at all this year. I know that he gets paid to play football. Save his ass, because of all of the old slot receivers and the Danny Amendolas and the Cole Beasleys of the world. I know Cole Beasley is not that old, but I mean, this is a 35-year-old guy, and they have completely ran his ass into the ground, and he has one more year on his deal. He doesn't deserve to come back to this absolute disaster. But the problem that I have is the fact that the New England Patriots, they're going to be dealing with not only upheaval in the locker room, but you got to think that Bill Belichick has to sit back and say, hey, maybe I'm not that great of a talent evaluator. From someone who has the same birthday as him, you would have to rip my hair out for me to admit that I suck at my job. You know, the amount of pride that lies within that man and the historical magnitude of him saying, I'm going to have to bring someone else in, or I'm going to have to give the power back, or I'm going to have to tell Nick Caserio to move on to another GM position. Hey, maybe it's time for me to tell Josh McDaniels to leave and go get that. There is not enough upheaval that could happen to this team during the regular season that could change the outlook for the 2021 team. Jerry, why am I sitting here and thinking this team is going to be worse next year than they are this year? Am I wrong?
Courtney,
I'm worried. Courtney, I'm very worried.
I needed to look me in the eye, okay? Listen to the reassuring sound of my voice, okay? It's not that bad. You were born on the same day that Tom Brady was drafted. There's a cosmic harmonic convergence going on here where we are going to get through this spiritually together, okay? Now, tell me where the man hurt you. No, look, here's the thing. They have money to spend in a league where very few teams are going to have money to spend. I won't get bogged down into it because I'm no capologist. I save certain websites because I know they will follow this stuff.
Oh, but my guy, Edwin, Pat's Cap, he's the best.
Yes, Miguel is great. And look, I'm too pretty to do arithmetic, and I was told there'd be none on this test. But the cap has always gone up about $10 million per year, 1 year to the next.
15, yeah. Now this year is going to be dropped back to 15. It's going to go from 210, which is expected, to 195.
You certainly know this better than I do. So teams are going to be slashing payroll, including New Orleans. They have no choice but to jettison cargo. About a third of the teams in the league are going to be dumping. I think it's going to be a buyer's market. I think the price is going to go down. It's going to be like if you go to a nudie bar during COVID, like, you know, you don't, these dancers are hungry. They want some money. You don't have to make it rain as much as you used to. They will give you their attention. Or so I hear. I don't know why that was my metaphor, but anyway, I trust that this talent evaluation system they've put in place doesn't need to be scrapped 2 years removed from their last championship. They always are losing guys. They always transition. There's always that guy that you think they can't possibly afford to win without this guy, whether it's Chandler Jones or, Kyle Van Noy's just the latest. And sure, he would be really helpful here, but they're always losing guys. That's the nature of the system that they've put in place. You make tons of money elsewhere. They overpay you. The Patriots don't, and they find the next one of you. And I trust that they're going to be able to do this. Stephon Gilmore looks like, I had for sure had him gone. Maybe he's not now because it's not going to be much of a market for him since he's going to need probably, surgery on his leg.
He's entering surgery, I think, that right now for a torn hamstring. Hamstring groin.
Calf. Yeah. By the way, a quick aside. I have a rule for injuries that mostly applies to baseball. I think for you to have an injury, it should be an action verb. A tear, a pull, a break, not tightness. And it should be a part of the body that every little kid can identify from the song Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes. Like if Clay Buchholz would miss like 6 to 8 weeks with tightness in his uvula. And I'm like, what is that? That's that thing in the back of your throat. Like, why does he need that? And so, okay. But that's that. Yet
right, from the Lions, he broke his throat.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a hard
one. Why am I laughing?
He broke his throat. And then his brother was like, pussy, he should be playing.
See, man breaks his throat. I'm not questioning anything about him. And believe me, I used to work for the state of Massachusetts. So I one time I missed 2 weeks of work with a bad haircut. So I'm not even going to question, Clay Buchholz's toughness. But, with football players, yes. A tear in whatever part of his leg it was, that serious. Maybe he stays. I don't know. I think there's depth there. I think you probably might stand to lose some core guys who have been here a while. To just retirement. Pat Chung has been rumored, Dante Hightower. you know, Devin McCourty, there's been thought the last couple of years that McCourty might retire. And he's come back twice. And on, I think if you lose one McCourty, you lose the other McCourty.
I think Jason should retire after this year. I think Devin should go one more year. And I'm very close with Devin. So, I mean, but I can't speak for him because I haven't spoken to him on that because.
Can you tell the difference between them? Because
yes, I can. I absolutely can. Yep. I can tell a difference in their voice and I can tell a difference when I look at them. Yep. Even baby pictures.
I'm so terrible at that. When I was coaching kids sport, we had twins. I coached them for 4 years. Liam and Ryan. We just always made sure we put Liam on the left and Ryan on the right. That's the only way, you know, it was like Linda, Rita. I'm sure the McCourtys would be able to pull like a, you know, a Lindsay Lohan on me all the time. And just
Jerron Harmon looks a lot like both of them. And I think that they used to call them like the freaky triplets. Like there were great stories. I think the McCourtys have told about Bill, like freaking Bill out. And then they're like, oh, I'm Jason. He's Devin. And I think Bill just lost his shit one day. He's like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, you need to stop. I don't get it. Like, I'm not happy. But then they just laugh.
I forget one of the really backbencher announcer teams one time when Harmon was still here, showed him on the bench, sitting there talking, and they just, and that's Devin McCourty and his brother Jason. It's like, he's got a uniform number on. Like, you know, it's like different ages. Oh, what, all Rutgers guys look alike? Is that, is your anti-Scarlet Knight bias showing here? I respect the hell out of those guys. And, you know, Devin in particular, I was asked this a while ago. Said, aside from Brady, obviously, who has been the best Patriots player during the dynasty era? And I said, you know what? All things considered, I'm going to go with Devin McCourty. Because, of course, you know, your default setting is to say Gronk, but a lot of missed time there. They won a Super Bowl with him on IR. McCourty has been integral. He never misses time. He's been a leader. He's been durable. He's been a four-down player. He's been huge on special teams. Like, you know, that talent evaluator who doesn't know how to draft hit a home run. A three-run homer drafting him. And there was blowback then. I remember Jerry Callahan. Oh, I love Jerry Callahan on the radio the next day. Oh, they drafted a gunner. Oh, he's a four-down player. He's a gunner. Terrific. Like, we need wide receivers. Well, he's got three rings, so I think it was a good call.
You know? Yeah. I think I had told him, too. I remember that night when he was drafted, and I was like, who the hell is Devin McCourty? Why did they get this guy? And I will tell you the one soft spot in Devin's career, if you talk to him, and it got brought up twice during my interview when I had him on the podcast, was he's very, very insecure about his second season. He was really bad in his sophomore campaign. And a lot of people don't remember it. And I didn't remember it until he kept bringing it up. And I was like, so clearly it bothers you that you have that one blemish on your record, which, listen, nobody's perfect. Brady has never been perfect. And, you know, I mean, there are certain years that he was, you know, that you could point out and say that was a down year or that was less than this one. But I can remember during quarantine back in June, they had these games on the Sports Hub, just randomly playing football games because it was, the end of June. It was the same day they signed Cam Newton. And they just were like, we're playing an old football game of the Patriots against the Washington football team at FedEx Field. And I remember I just was loving it. It was like the windows were down. I'm riding down 93, heading to get a lobster roll in Duxbury. And I'm like, this is great. And I'm listening to this game. I'm hearing names like Dane Fletcher with the tackle. Oh, that was like, wow. Yeah. And it was like Rob Ninkovich all over the field. And I was like, man. And then I hear Zoe go, God damn, that Devin McCourty, he's playing bad, man. He's God, another miss. You got to get this kid out of here. He sucks.
Oh, yeah. You know,
and I was like, oh my God. And listen, God loves Zoe. I love Zoe so much. And he, I mean, you want to talk about someone who hates Cam. I mean, he hates Cam so much. He's talking in the middle of Bob Soucy doing the calls now. He's like, that's done him warmed up on the sidelines. What the hell is going on? But yeah, no, he was ripping on Devin, and it was yeah. Funny.
Think about McCourtius as a rookie. I say to this day, he had the best rookie season of any cornerback they've ever had. And I'm showing my age here, but I'm old enough to remember Mike Haynes when I was a kid.
Oh, I remember Mike Haynes.
You knew from the beginning how good this guy was. Mm-hmm. And I think McCourty had a better rookie season. And then I heard this theory by one of the football writers I used to work with, and I thought it held water. His first few games that second season, he faced some of the top wide receivers in the league, all physically big guys. I want to say Brandon Marshall was one of them. Who was it with the Steelers? I think he basically got put in the torture chamber by a couple guys and just kind of lost confidence. I'll think of who it was. But
do you remember there was a name that got brought up the other day? Peerless Price. Do you remember Peerless Price?
Oh God, that's a blast in the past. Oh yeah, right. Absolutely. And yeah, I wonder if he was one of them.
He was on the Bills.
The Bills early in the season.
Yeah.
And then they moved him back to safety, and he was fantastic. He's been quarterback in that defense forever. You know, Dante Hightower had a tough rookie season. Back then I was doing the pre and post game show on Comcast Sports, and I would sit there and have lunch with these professional football players during halftime, and they would just look at Hightower, look at him. He's lost. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, same with Chandler Jones, though. I remember he came out. They were like, this kid is too lanky. He was like maybe 40, 50 pounds lighter than he is now. He's got to put more beef on his frame.
Yeah.
He was completely lost. And I didn't even recognize the fact that he was like an all-pro until maybe years after people were saying, oh, look what he's doing down in Arizona. He was a fine edge rusher, but
They put him in there as like a rush specialist, which this system will never do. So you're never going to get the high sack totals. And they would ask him to do different things. And I can't tell you how many times I'd watch him and, you know, play would go around his end. And where is he? He's diving inside the tackle guard gap. And he's supposed to be on the edge. The thing with Hightower is what kind of made me cut him some slack was Teddy Bruschi said, I made that transition into the middle. It's hard. I was a defensive end. He was an outside linebacker. And so he figured it out over time. And then you'd see, like, you'd freeze frame a play, and Hightower would be three steps towards the ball before anybody else had come out of their stance. And that's when you said, okay, he's starting to get it. And they need that out of a lot of these young guys on this defense, I think. It's going to take time. The offseason hurt them. I'll apply that to the tight ends too. God willing. I mean, there's no way Asiasi and Dalton Keene. And by the way,
can be bust. There's no way. I won't convince myself yet
that there can be good. I couldn't have been more wrong about one thing I said all season long. Like, oh yeah, well, they lost this guy. They lost Van Noy. Yeah. Jamie Collins, whatever, but at least they'll be better at tight end. You know, those guys on Sunday, I think they each got two targets, which like doubled their targets for the season. And Keene, the one he caught, he ended up fumbling it. He was like a, you know, like a grizzly bear slapping at a salmon, just like this. It was like, you can't just hold on to the ball. But then he was getting overthrown. And yeah, there's no way they could be this bad. They were the second and fourth tight ends to come off the board.
I know.
So maybe they just need that year of seasoning like Damian Harris got. I mean, we have no doubts about Damian Harris and what he could do, but where was he last year? They just redshirt freshmaned him. It was bizarre. Yeah, so, you know, they need these guys to mature. Certainly, you know, Kyle Duggar looks like a revelation. Josh Uche just has Uche.
Yeah. That he looks phenomenal. I don't know if Chase Winovich is going to have the staying power to hang around.
It looked like he was transitioned himself into a three down linebacker, but you see now when they're in a game like they were the other day where they're just getting run on, he's nowhere on the field. Yeah. I think they just figure he's he's not strong enough. He doesn't have the old sand in the pants or whatever the draft gurus like to say. He's not a big butted war daddy. And that he's going to be a rush guy when, like we were saying about Chandler Jones, if that's all you do, you're not going to last long here, but I like him. I think he's a high motor player. There's a role for him. It's just weird that he'll get, 45 snaps 1 week and the next he gets 10.
Yeah. Well, as we're kind of wrapping this up, I'm just thinking there's so much to talk about with this Patriots team.
Absolutely.
I mean, you could just, we could go on, we could have a 4-hour radio show every day, which is what I used to do at EEI. And so did you. So hopefully we'll make this a somewhat a consistent thing. So
this is much better. We just narrow it down. We don't take calls from morons and
Dan and Quincy who starts screaming at you. Anyone, I remember Mark James saying Dan and Quincy was his favorite caller ever. And this guy, for those of you who don't know sports radio in Boston, this guy will call up and be like, "Hi, Jerry and Courtney, I'm really thinking about this New England Patriots team, and I'm wondering what the future is going to be like or whether they can actually make it down to 8-8. And I just think that Josh McDaniels," and he starts screaming. He'll be calm, and he starts screaming at the top of his lungs. And I'm sitting there, and Mark James would leave him on the radio for at least 45 seconds. William, what the fuck are you doing? This guy he's blowing out my, I understand that maybe that's how some people interpret that you and me talk on the radio, but what are you doing? Letting this guy just take over the show and be as obnoxious as he is.
And go right to car alarm voice of his. He was banned from the show that I was on. I mean, I used to do some weekends and stuff and talk to him, and I'd just be like, if that's what sports made me do, I would stop following sports altogether. I'd just start reading novels or get into musical theater or something that didn't always have me pissed off. And I'd always I'm sorry, I'm a big picture guy. It's not 1999 anymore. We're not 15 years removed from our last title. Things are good. As soon as they're done putting away the barriers from the last Duck Boat parade, they're breaking them out for the next one. Relax, enjoy yourself. What would it be like for you if you were living in some city that is one or two over your lifetime? Cleveland. I mean, in Cleveland, they're still living off of that Cavs title. Pardon me if I sort of appreciate the fact that, I wrote a book called Five Rings and a couple of years later had to change it to Six Rings.
Change it to Six Rings? Can I have one of your, did you see that? Okay. I'm going to need a signed copy. I actually am going to get some coffee. Are coffee table books the biggest waste of money ever?
Oh yeah.
$95
I never open. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember buying for one of my ex-boyfriends. I bought him a Frank Lloyd Wright architecture. That's what he loved, the architecture. I bought him a Frank Lloyd Wright coffee table book and I spent $98 on it, and I don't think he ever used it or even put it out on his coffee table. It's like, all right, so why I'm going to spend $300 on a Chanel fashion book. That's so, it's so everyone my age. I'm just not. So I got to go figure out different coffee table books that are acceptable for chicks who like sports.
You just want something that's going to make it look like you're an intellect when people visit. Like a Frank Lloyd Wright book would do it.
The Kobe book I'm gonna get, it was hardcover. I think it was $40 when I went to Barnes and Noble, but I bought Michael Holly's book. I bought Friday Night Lights, the original one. I bought, what else did I buy? I bought Sports Betting for Dummies.
Okay. Did you buy From Darkness to Dynasty, the first 40 years of the New England Patriots by?
No, I didn't.
Celebrated author Jerry Thornton. Okay.
Well, yeah. I was in Barnes & Noble and there was a very small football section. So you tell me which ones that you want me to buy. And the Holly book, I realized it was outdated.
Six Rings just came out. It's perfect for everyone on your list.
Perfect.
From Darkness to Dynasty, or I like to call it by its Star Wars droid name, FD2D, it's a history book. It's a perennial. And I think it's that. I wrote it for people who lived through it, but also for people like I have a son who, I was 22 the first time the Patriots won a playoff game. And I said, I can die happy now. They've won a playoff game. By the time he hit 22, he had seen them win 6 Super Bowls, yeah. Go to 9. And so it's for people to know like how utterly ridiculous they were, how it was hilarious. It was tragic. It was weird. The stadium was the breakdown of societal order. It was Lord of the Flies with goalposts. And the time guys got electrocuted carrying the goalposts up Route 1. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they sued.
They sued. No way.
They sued. And I don't know what part of them got damaged, but I like to think it was their reproductive organs so that they'll never have money. And I got an angry email from a woman who was mad. When she read the book, she was mad that I called them idiots because one of them was my husband. And you know what? He wasn't carrying the goalposts. He was just walking down the street, minding his own business. Right, lady. Yeah. Yeah. Because that's how electricity works. It leaves the thin-walled steel that men are holding onto and leaps across the street to randomly attack.
He wasn't three sheets to the wind.
Yeah, exactly.
The game and how abysmal they were.
He was just out for a stroll on a Sunday with 60,000 other dopes. But anyway, that's sort of what the gist of the book was and the funny parts. And if I couldn't squeeze laughs out of it, I wouldn't have bothered. But it was. It's fun to. I've now officially written more books than I've read. So there you go.
I love that. I love that. I'm.
Well, you get coffee table books. You don't have to read them. There's nothing in there I need to know.
I know.
It makes me look smart to visitors.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll do that. Well, I got to say one more thing. What's one thing that really just makes you sad that the younger generations just don't know about? The old game of football. I mean, you know, I'm 33, so I really started following the game late 90s, early 2000s. And I mean, that's what, you know, a name like Peerless Price that jumps up. I was like, wow, I remember that guy used to burn every, he was a larger set guy, right? He was big.
Oh yeah. Jesus.
He was like 6'4" and he had wide. I mean, he was a bigger wide receiver.
Yep.
I'm not saying he's my one example. Right. What makes you sad about the league this year that they don't? I mean, to me, it's okay. Knows who Steven Jackson was. No one knows what kind of a runner. And I'm blanking on my favorite player. He ran for the Denver Broncos, and I can't think. Terrell Owens. Terrell Davis.
Terrell Davis. Yep.
Terrell Davis was my favorite running back. I mean,
made it into the Hall of Fame with a preposterously low number of games played in his career. It's about how good he was and the fact that without him, John Elway retires with no Super Bowls, flat out. He was along for the ride then. And yeah, Davis was phenomenal. This is not specific to a player, but it's the thing I miss most about football is, God, this is going to sound like such a hacky, like kind of Chris Berman thing to say, but I loved games on sloppy fields in weather. There was nothing like the feeling of being warm and snug in your living room next to the Christmas tree, and you're watching a game like played in the mud or in the snow, and guys like uniforms would be, you barely see their numbers by like, you know, by the end of the second quarter.
There's like a Steelers game that's popping up in my mind like this.
It was probably a road game because as long as I can remember, Three Rivers was played on turf. But like, you know, in Oakland, and they'd play like on the dirt of the infield, and Cleveland was that way. And there was just such a joy about that as opposed to like, you know, watching that element doesn't exist at like Saints games or whatever. I have a specific memory as a kid where O.J. Simpson, who later became famous, he had a miniseries. He ran... in a blizzard against the Patriots, when the Pats were bad, ran for like 258 yards.
Wow.
It was like he was existing in this weird traction that nobody else could have. Like he was hovering above the ground, like this ethereal figure without human form. And I thought to myself, you know what? He could have put that glove on if his heart was really in it, you know? Having seen him tear the Patriots apart in a blizzard, he just, He kind of half-assed that one. Oh. But if there was some incentive, he would have gotten that thing on his hand, I'm convinced.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God, I love
it. If there's one player from my that I would like to see play.
I mean, Hines Ward. There were
I would say Barry Sanders would be mine.
Oh, yeah.
He just, I had him in fantasy. I've been playing fantasy football since the 80s. I kid you not.
I know. You know what's remarkable that I didn't even realize that fantasy football existed back then?
Yeah, it was not many people do. It was friends of mine and I, and we did our own scores by using the box score from the Globe. That was our arbiter of what the accurate numbers are. And I had Barry Sanders, and there'd be these games where they'd bottle him up, and he'd have like 10 carries for 12 yards or whatever, and you just, oh, okay, all right, just wait. And he would bust one. The guy who was a threat to score every time he touched the ball, and just he walked away from the game, like a season or two away from the all-time yards record, and zero regrets. Like he's just, I watched the Football Life about him, and people were calling up Detroit talk shows saying, hey, I used to hate O.J. Simpson more than any other running back, but he only murdered two people. Barry Sanders murdered a whole region. Like, what? You think Boston talk shows are bad? You're right. But imagine saying that. But he's a dude who had his shit together and just was fascinating to watch. I friggin' love him.
There's so many of those, and I just hope maybe some people, you know, the young kids can pick up your book and learn a thing or two about the past. But really, it's more of a thing that, oh, man, you know, the one thing I miss is getting that Patriots Championship DVD. When you got the Patriots Championship DVD and I played that maybe 13 times, and I remember them walking into that Super Bowl with the Rams, and I just, that line that I already know because I memorized all of them, and Teddy Bruschi looked at them and he said, you hit them when they have the ball and you hit them when they don't have the ball.
Ricky Prohl. And tonight a dynasty is born, baby. And he was right. Now I did research into this, and I know we got to go, but after they won that first Super Bowl, Adam Vinatieri went on Letterman. And I've seen the clip. A friend of mine gave it to me. I'd forgotten all about it. He's wearing like the leather pants and like the 90s sweater and stuff. And so just to tell you how long they've been on top, right? Because this was that old 4:3 aspect ratio. You know, it wasn't digital TV. So Letterman takes him up to the top of the building, and they've got him kicking footballs into the Manhattan sky.
Right? No.
Midtown Manhattan. Now, on the...
How did someone not die?
No, Letterman was just fearless. Well, on the roof of the building across the way, there to catch the footballs was a good friend of Letterman's, a Manhattan business mogul by the name of Donald J. Trump.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Well, like, imagine if you could, 2020 Courtney could go back and visit 2002 Courtney and just go, okay, Vinatieri will still be playing. Letterman will have a beard out to here, and he'll be on a thing called Netflix you'll soon find out about. And the other guy, well, you'll find out about the other guy.
That other guy, I don't know.
Yeah, but the one thing that has been constant in that, in addition to Vinatieri still playing, is the Patriots have still been winning until now, until this conversation. This is exactly how I said the world would look if Brady ever leaves New England. I said, it's going to be, the economy will be in a shambles. The schools will be closed. Everything will be shut down. We'll be living in a dystopian hellscape out of a Chekhov play. I called it. No one would listen to me, though. I was like the scientist in every movie. No one would listen, but I was right. I'm sorry.
If I sneeze on someone, everyone's going to die. It's going to be like Airborne, that movie with the infectious apes, and people start convulsing on the streets, and they have sores all over, and then they die instantly.
Each other apart to get the vaccine. If Brady had just stayed, Brady left on one of my favorite days of the year, Irish
on
Christmas.
Fucking on St. Patrick's Day. Do you know what I did? Yeah, you had plans.
I had plans to meet a neighbor at 8:30 in the morning at the pub. And instead, his announcement came over, and I physically couldn't handle the computer mouse. My hand was shaking so much. It was like palsy shake. And I wrote about it as much as I could, type out words. And a little while later, I look out my front window and this figure has dropped something on my front steps. And I look and it's that neighbor I was going to meet. She left me a can of Guinness.
Oh,
and I had it for breakfast. It was a bad day. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget
that when I heard that news and I was like angry and I was fine. I was like, all right, well, I got to do with this and that. And I think I drank like half a bottle of wine and I was sitting in my living room, probably more than half a bottle. And here is my parents, 33-year-old. Well, I was 32 at the time. I didn't say that. 33-year-old grown woman sitting on the fireplace, hysterically crying. I was screaming and weeping. And I was like, I just can't. And I was screaming. And I was like, you don't understand. I was like, but it's true. I was like, this is the same man that had me fall in love with football. And if it wasn't for Tom Brady, and my brother was a big Bledsoe guy, and I said, they're going to stick with Brady. I like this guy. He's the reason that I fell in love with football and I fell in love with sports and I followed that. I mean, I wouldn't be who I am today if it wasn't for Tom Brady. I know that sounds crazy, but just think about the trickulation of what that championship and what my passion and my love for the New England Patriots led into, and my obsession with sports radio and my obsession with wanting to become a broadcaster, this and that. So it all came to the culmination of me screaming, hysterically crying in front of my parents, who just sat there. And I was like, they're probably going to think I'm crazy, but they looked and they were like, I understand.
Crying, and really though, really.
This is the same.
No way. I was a rock.
This is the same kid too, that when I was 9 years old and I watched the Patriots in the Super Bowl lose to the Green Bay Packers, and I was watching and I was screaming. I was like, don't they understand that they disappointed all of New England? Who even lives in Wisconsin anyways? And my parents were like, you are so embarrassing. I'm so glad we didn't send you to your friend's house. What am I going to do with this kid who's having a meltdown over a football game? I think they knew it was par for the course, at least.
Okay. It's so clear with Brady. I pretty much just clutched my knees to my chest in the shower and listened to a lot of Billie Eilish. And I checked. WebMD suggested that I was having what they called stroke-like symptoms. So stay off of that. No, listen, it's, you know what it is, Courtney? And I'm glad that Brady made you love sports and that you care enough to sob uncontrollably. I had a Patriots beat writer say this to me not long after I started at EEI, and he goes, you know what? I envy you because you care. Like, this is fun for you. I just want the story. I don't care who wins or loses. And I was like, thank God.
There's some people.
I ended up at Barstool where my job is to just say what I think, feel how I feel. Like, it's not like there's no agenda other than this is who I like and this is who I root for. And when they win, I'm happy. And this is who I root against. And when they win, I'm disappointed. And I have things that I hate and just express that. And I have friends who have promised me, if I ever get to the point where I'm like, I don't care who wins or loses, I just want the story, that they're to kill me and put me in a shallow grave. I don't want to go into the effort. Just a shallow grave. I mean,
this is 6 feet. Electrocuted fence around your grave in case they want to dig you out.
There you go. But I'm going to tell them that I have a map to a pirate treasure just to liven it up. But no, I'm glad you care as much as I do. This year is tough. It's a difficult adjustment just because we're not used to it. This is life for everybody else. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the year the Packers drafted Aaron Rodgers to replace Brett Favre, they went 4-12 and their fans were furious. Like, what are we doing wasting a pick on this guy when we've got Brett Favre? So the Pats may finish 500 and I don't know how to process that.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I have so many more thoughts that I want to continue, but that's all the time that we got today. Jerry Thornton, you're going to send me a book, 6 Rings. You're going to sign it. It's going to be in the front and center of my coffee table and I'm going to read it and clutch my knees and, you know, drink some whiskey, but in a happy way.
Yeah, exactly. And then we'll celebrate 7 rings when that comes out, hopefully soon.
Yes, hey. Absolutely. That's the man, Jerry Thornton. He writes for Barstool. He does knee jerk reactions, which I have been reading for like maybe the last 35 years of my life. I feel like you were like the original Bill Simmons column. Bill Simmons column, yeah. Everyone was like, wow, did you read the essay, the Bill? And it was like, no, like knee jerk reactions. That's about as far as I can go. I can't scroll down that much. So,
you know what? I've been writing those in some form since about 2002. I just started on a message board and I can't believe it's my job. You know,
yeah, I love it.
Well, waking up at 5 this morning to write today's, that was well worth it. Thanks for the support. Thanks for supporting and promoting literacy in America with the book that I'm going to send you. And this was fun. It's the first time I've done this. I hope like hell it's not the last.
No, me too. Gary, we love you. Thank you.
No more will my green seagull turn a deeper blue. I could not foresee this thing happening to you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.